Hello, I'm Ken McLeod, Principal Teacher at Unfettered Mind. Our website is an ongoing effort to explain Buddhist practice in a way that is clear and accessible to the Western mind without dumbing it down. If you find these teachings useful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate so we can continue to maintain and expand the site. Thanks.
Unfettered Mind, the nuts and bolts of merit and dedication.
And, at the end of our teaching periods, meditation periods, we do the dedication prayers. Again, in the Tibetan tradition, the conclusion of practice actually had three kinds of prayers. One was dedication, the second was aspiration, and the third were prayers for good fortune for all. And we have these in very concise form here. We have three dedication prayers. The first is to use this goodness to overcome unwholesomeness, that is the enemy wrong action, and so through that freeing all beings from the vicissitudes of samsara. The second is a verse from the Shangpa tradition, which I like as a way of dedicating merit, because it's dedicating it free from any conceptual mind, to dedicate it in the realm of totality. I do not cling in any way to the virtue and goodness I have generated. In order that all beings may benefit from it, I dedicate it in the realm of totality, which means to say that I have no sense of having done virtue or of there being virtue. I'm just free from any conceptual mind, so total openness. And the third verse here is a traditional one. This virtue and virtue gathered in the three times I dedicate as all Buddhas do to supreme non-residing awakening. This term non-residing awakening refers to it doesn't reside in samsara, that is in the confusion, and it also doesn't reside in the quietude of nirvana, or this isn't the nirvana the way that's understood in the Theravadan tradition, but in the Mahayana tradition, one form of nirvana was a kind of a place to become free of samsara, but you weren't really working for the welfare of others. So it was just a really nice way to hang out for indefinitely. But the term non-residing awakening means you're not resting in confusion, you're not resting in that kind of passive expression of wisdom. You aren't resting anywhere. You're fully engaged in life itself. Then aspiration, we just use one prayer here, and this is the aspiration for bodhicitta or awakening mind. And then finally, the good fortune prayers. There are many, many forms that these can take, but these are ones that I came across which I liked. The first one is about the, based in the Vajrayana, the energy of the lineage teachers or gurus. Uses the metaphor of clouds gathering in the sky, out of that pouring down abilities into us, which is the abilities that come through practicing deity meditation, coming down like rain, and then through that activating that the awareness, which takes expression, symbolic expression is the dakinis and protectors, this awareness which knows exactly what to do. It doesn't depend on deduction or inference. It's just that very, very direct knowing that's at the very heart of all of us. The two aims here, good fortune, may the two aims come about naturally. The two aims are the aim for ourself, which is freedom from samsara, and the aim for others is that the welfare of others be taken care of so that they are also freed from samsara. So the two aims refer to ourselves and others. And then the last verse, again, is an aspiration. the power of aspirations, the power of dependence and conditions or interdependence, and the power of what is. That's the power of being itself. May all these forms of all these various forces produce good for the world. And it's a prayer that good fortune spread everywhere for all beings.
It's more of a learning tool than a praying to something?
Well, they certainly, I mean, many of the prayers embody so much teaching that when you read and memorize them, it's a way of just taking that stuff in. So in that sense, yes, they are a learning tool and can be very, very useful as a learning tool and as a reminder. But you're also, these are prayers, these are sentiments and attitudes that you're forming. And you can, in a certain sense, yes, you are praying to the teachers, you're praying to the Buddhas. Now, you can say, well, what am I praying to? They're just reflections of my own mind. But in that sense, you're praying to the awakened aspect of your own mind, even if you don't know it, so that it actually communicates with you. So this is, you might say, a conversation, a very deep conversation you're having with the totality of your own experience, so that it leads you to relate to your own experience in a way which moves you towards awakening. You can look at it that way. Okay?
Thanks.
Right. But many people find, because they have connections with a particular figure or a particular expression, that they feel like they're really praying to Tara or to Guru Padmasambhava or to their teacher or something like that, and allows all of their emotional energy to go into this. And that pouring of emotional energy into prayer just opens one up hugely, so that things can actually come in. So I find that sincere prayer is, it takes you right into the depths of your heart. And when you pray that way, things can happen very, very quickly.
Hi, before we get off of the subject, I've wondered about the term prayer, mm-hmm. in Buddhist teachings as opposed to in many other religions. Obviously, it's a same word. Could you elaborate a little bit? Because to my instinct about it is there's some different quality to it in this.
Well, in Catholic contemplative work, there are several different kinds of prayer recognized. There's petitionary prayer, where you're asking for something. There's ejaculatory prayer, which is just a spontaneous expression of feeling. And there's contemplative prayer, which is what we would call meditation. And these are all different forms of prayer. And I think there are additional ones. Those are the ones that I'm familiar with. There's a centering prayer, Lord Jesus, have mercy upon me, a sinner, which is used very much as a mantra in Catholic contemplative practice. And these are all regarded as different forms of prayer. So when we use the word prayer in the Catholic context, we're really talking about meditation in many different forms. When we talk about prayer in Buddhist practice, we have very explicit meditation practices, but those can and often do include various forms of prayer, particularly in the Tibetan tradition. And the word prayer, there are two kinds of prayer, broadly speaking. One is, the Tibetan is soba dep, which means literally to ask for something. So again, it's petitionary prayer. And then the other is munlam, which is basically means aspiration, giving rise to big thoughts. So you're aspiring to these wonderful things. Now, the lineage prayer at the beginning that we did, perfection of wisdom, mother, Buddhas, union of refuges, I pray to you from the bottom of my heart. And then you go through and you're asking for various things. And you're asking for these various spiritual qualities. Now, going back to what Chuck said just a few moments ago, are you praying to something? Well, yes, you are. You're praying to perfection of wisdom. Whether you regard that as a goddess, because there is a perfection of wisdom who has four arms, etc., in the iconography, and feel a lot of faith in that, or you regard the perfection of wisdom as the wisdom aspect of your own mind, in a certain sense, it doesn't make any difference. That you can relate to either of those. There's an emotional element that goes into that. And in praying to the perfection of wisdom for these spiritual qualities, if you really let yourself feel how much you want that and open up emotionally to that, then it becomes very powerful. And for some people, it's more powerful as a symbol. For some people, it's more powerful as a god or deity or goddess. That's really up to the individual practitioner. When you're taking refuge and generating bodhicitta, strictly speaking, those aren't prayers in the ways that I've just defined them, those two kinds of prayers. These are repetition of sentiments. They're ways of reminding yourself and taking that very, very much to heart. The four immeasurables, again, are sentiments that you're seeking to engender in yourself. When you get into prayers such as the Mahamudra prayer, which you'll find a translation up on the website and other things, these are things, you know, may I do this, may I do this. It's a way of giving expression to your spiritual aspirations. And as you may recall, that one of the two kinds of bodhicitta, of awakening to what is apparently true, is the bodhicitta of aspiration and the bodhicitta of engagement. And the bodhicitta of aspiration is all about saying, may I do this, may I do this, may I do this, and just being big and big, because when you think this way, then your mind actually becomes more open, it becomes bigger and allows you to open to the fullness of your experience. So these prayers are, when you take them to heart like this, become very, very powerful methods of practice.
This is from Linda in Laguna Beach, California. Since attending your Monsters Under the Bed retreat in 2007, I've concluded my daily meditation by reciting the dedication prayer. The idea is to dedicate the virtue I've generated for the benefit of all sentient beings. But I feel a tinge of inauthenticity when I do this, because I question how much virtue my fairly young practice generates. It feels like I'm patting myself on the back undeservedly or accepting credit for something I haven't achieved. Can you provide a fuller explanation of this concept that might help me feel less like a fraud?
You sit down to practice. You do that with an intention. Intention of to wake up or to be more present in your life. And as you do your practice, if you're like most of us, you struggle a bit letting go of thoughts and letting go of negative states of mind and coming back to the practice itself. So you are practicing virtue, whether you think so or not, because every time you let go of a negative thought and come back to the breath, you have stopped creating some suffering or negativity. You've stopped a certain process of conditioning. And it may seem very small or insignificant at this stage. It may feel like drops of water in a large vase. But there's enough drops of water, the vase fills up. The purpose of dedicating virtue is so that we don't attach to any idea about ourselves or about what we've accomplished. That is, we may feel that we've just generated a teaspoon of virtue, but what we do is we dedicate it to the welfare of all beings. In the traditional example, it's like taking that teaspoon of water and putting it in the ocean. If we just kept the teaspoon for ourselves, then it would evaporate quickly. because of the various reactive emotions, pride or anger or something like that. But when you put it into the ocean, that water's there for the rest of time. So I have no idea why you feel like a fraud, because the practice of meditation is doing good work. And there's no getting away from that. You're being uncomfortable with that? That's interesting. You might consider what part of you is not comfortable with it. What's your experience of that? How much does that run in the rest of your life? What suffering does it create for you? What suffering does it create for others? So the reactions that you have, in other words, to the very act of dedicating the merit at the end of practice, that also becomes a possible basis for your practice.
Sharon in San Francisco, California asks, what is the purpose of a dedication? I understand we can actually dedicate any task or activity. How does that benefit others?
Kala Rinpoche, my teacher, used to say, when we do some good, it's like putting some water in a teaspoon. If we just leave the water there, it soon dries up in the sun. But if we tip the water into the sea, then it's there forever. When we do some good, we can often pat ourselves on the back. It's a bit of pride. Or sometimes we can regret it and think, oh, I really shouldn't have done that. I should have done this instead. Or we can feel better than somebody. Like, I did this and that was better than so-and-so. So competitiveness or jealousy. And when the good that we do becomes the basis for pride or jealousy or any negative emotion, it kind of undoes the good, doesn't it? So that's the reason for dedication. It's a conscious act of sharing, saying, okay, this was good. And now I want this good, I dedicate this good to the welfare of all. So it's a way of developing a very big mind of compassion, of not just owning that good or trying to own it for ourselves, but dedicating it to the welfare of all beings. Then you ask, does it actually benefit anyone? Well, I think it does, but not necessarily in the way that we might ordinarily think. When we dedicate in this way, we let go. We let go of the need for credit. We let go of the need for recognition. We let go of the need to be better than somebody else. And by practicing that letting go regularly, after every meditation session, every time we do something good, then doing good ceases to be something special and becomes something very natural, just what we do. And we don't think about it very much. And when doing good becomes what we naturally do, then I think everybody benefits.
This question is from Dwayne in Seattle, Washington. My brother is in Soka Gakkai International. He has an SGI practice in which he uses chanting to accumulate merit. What is the outlook from the Tibetan Buddhist point of view regarding accumulating merit? What does it point to in practice?
Ah, merit. Very important, as some teachers would say. Let's talk a bit about merit and accumulating merit first. This goes back to a time, to a medieval society, essentially, when monasteries functioned as the banks of the society. That is, the surplus, the agricultural surpluses of the society were stored in monasteries, which then distributed them in times of hardship and famine to the population. And that was the beginning of what we now have as our banking institutions. So we have a whole raft of metaphors which come from these medieval times, and accumulating merit is one of them. Now, to us today, it sounds like there's this spiritual bank account in the sky, and we make deposits in it, and hopefully it accumulates interest, and we withdraw it in some way and get enlightened. Sounds very nice. But it's merit is an odd word in English. Another word that it would be equally appropriate to translate this word is luck. That is, what we're doing is accumulating luck. That's certainly how many people in China view it. So they will make lots of offerings and do lots of rituals, religious rituals and so forth, for the very express purpose of accumulating luck, so they have good luck in business and good luck in other areas of their lives. Trungpa Rinpoche coined the phrase spiritual materialism to talk about this kind of attitude. It's not true spiritual practice, because the aim there is to do good works with the express intention of improving one's own situation in the world, in life, in existence. Whereas from the Buddhist point of view, the real aim of spiritual practice isn't about improving things, it's to become free of the six realms of existence, or to put it in more modern vocabulary, to come to know what we are and how we are without the projection of thought and emotion. So from that point of view, accumulating merit can be a bit problematic. Nevertheless, it's a very, very important part of our aspect of spiritual practice, because when we do good, our minds become lighter and clearer, and we create the conditions within ourselves that are more conducive to meditation practice, to being awake, responsive, for the growth of compassion and loving kindness and so forth. But when we do good with those motivations, that's very different from doing good so that one can become rich or wealthy or influential or powerful and so forth. So really, what is the distinction here, the important distinction here, is the motivation or the intention in doing these practices. I'll give you one very simple example. Soon after I moved to Los Angeles, this is back in the 80s, a friend of mine that I knew and had originally met in Vancouver called me up and said she was down for the day, just feeling really depressed. And so could we have lunch? And so we went and had lunch together. And afterwards she said, you know, I'm still feeling very depressed. So I said, okay, let's go down to Fisherman's Wharf. And we bought a couple of buckets of bait fish and dumped them into the ocean down at the marina in Los Angeles. And she chanted mantras like the Tara Mantra and the Chenrezig's Mantra, over them as she set them free. And she paid for the fish, which was about $20 or something like that. And then we left. And as we left, she looked at me and she said, "That worked." So just doing good things. I mean, I love the bumper sticker, the random acts of kindness. It's a very good thing to do. So doing good is very good. It's an important part of spiritual practice. But don't do it with the intention of getting something in return. That's all.
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you wish to use part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.